KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Pete's Coffee and Tea, introducing Pete's E-Cups, letting you send a friend a cup. On the web at Pete's.com. That's P-E-E-T-S.
Good morning. This is the KABU Morning News for Wednesday, March 15th, 2006. I'm Becca Bartleson.
And I'm Carlos Chavez.
Coming up on this morning's news, Portland General Electric's coal-fired power plant may be the leading source of pollution in the Columbia River Gorge. Indie media, Food Not Bombs, and the Communist Party land on the terrorist watch. And in Israel, Palestinians protest the forceful removal of several Palestinian prisoners, including leader Ahmed Sadat. Today's Portland area weather, rain likely, highs 45 to 50. Tonight, showers likely, lows around 40.
As far as Caesar knew, the Ides were just another day. The fortune teller's warning to Julius Caesar, "Beware the Ides of March," has forever given the date a sense of foreboding. But in Roman times, the expression Ides of March did not necessarily evoke a dark mood. It was simply the standard way of saying March 15th. The term Ides comes from the earliest Roman calendar, which is said to have been devised by Romulus, the mythical founder of Rome. The Roman calendar organized its months around 3 days, each of which served as a reference point for counting the other days, calends being the first of the month, nonus being the ninth, and ides the 15th, or ides. The remaining unnamed days of the month were identified by counting backwards from the calends, nonus, or the ides. So now you know.
10 weeks after the start of a new Medicare drug benefit plan, nearly half of all eligible Oregonians still have not enrolled. Of the roughly 547,000 Oregonians who qualified for drug assistance, about 243,000, 44%, have not yet signed up. This according to data collected by the Kaiser Family Foundation. Seniors and others who have watched the new plan, known as Medicare Part D, take shape, say some of the early startup problems have been resolved. But new obstacles pop up each month with the latest batch of new enrollees. While seniors are trying to choose their drug plan from dozens of options, pharmacists are trying to get paid. The companies that have actually reimbursed them have been slow to pay. Jim Thompson, executive director of the Oregon Pharmacy Association, says he knows some pharmacists have put out medication on a handshake, but they can't continue forever. He said the delayed payments have hit small, independent, rural pharmacies harder than larger chains, which have more financial resources to back them up while payments are being processed. Thompson says another crisis could develop April 1st, when state support is scheduled to end for people who encounter difficulties getting expensive drugs and could not afford to buy them. Seniors have until May 15th to enroll in a drug plan without penalty. After that date, they will pay an extra 1% of the monthly premium for each month that they fail to enroll.
Portland General Electric's coal-fired power plant near Boardman is likely a leading source of the pollution that muddies air in the Columbia River Gorge during the winter. This according to the Oregonian. New research shows emissions from the plant may reach with ammonia rising from a large dairy and feedlot complex nearby to form haze particles that funnel into the gorge. Mark Green, an atmospheric scientist from the Desert Research Institute, is leading the research to identify the causes of declining air quality in the gorge. The gorge is one of the most polluted natural areas in the West. PGE officials said the company has hired an independent consultant to examine emissions from the coal plant. The plant was built about 30 years ago without pollution controls required of new plants today. But PGE officials stopped short of committing to improvements necessary to clean up the gorge if it is not legally required. Although the gorge is a national scenic area, it lacks air quality protections commonly attached to national parks and wilderness areas. An effort to design a strategy to clean up air in the gorge has been beset by budget cuts and has long been going on for years.
On Monday, Lidiana Soto, the daughter of immigrant parents, won the essay contest at the 16th annual Cesar Chavez Hispanic Student Leadership Conference at the University of Portland. Soto was among more than 1,300 Latinos youths, clad in blue Chavez t-shirts gathered to honor the legacy of civil rights leader who prized education and withstood obstacles to help farm workers. The event brings together more than 30 community presenters and colleges to encourage Latino students from more than 65 high schools in the Northwest to become leaders, go to college, and give back to the community. The conference has blossomed since it began in 1990 at Montgomery Park with 160 students. Recent state figures showed a 10% increase in Latino enrollment at Oregon schools, the most significant in nearly a decade. In Oregon, little more than half of Latinos graduate from high school on time. Of those who go to college, about 25% of Latinos finished with a bachelor's degree, compared with 50% of white college students. The disparity is a result of several factors, including many Latinos enroll in community colleges instead of four-year institutions, and many attend part-time instead of full-time. This according to the Oregonian.
The Port of Portland is saying it has reached a container service agreement with an Israeli shipping company that will add 172 jobs to the regional economy and boost exports. Zim American Integrated Shipping Services will make its first call in Portland May 14th. The Port of Portland will be its only port of call on the West Coast. The port's executive director, Bill Wyatt, says Zim's decision will ensure our businesses continue to have competitive access to world markets. Zim also plans to offer service to distribution centers in Minneapolis and in Joliet, Illinois, through Portland, allowing shippers more choices when moving cargo from Asia to the Midwest and East Coast. The service is mostly by rail and partly by trucks. The agreement also will demonstrate the Port of Portland's ability to serve as a gateway for containerized freight into the Midwest. Based in Haifa, Zim is among the top 20 container shipping companies in the world.
Oregon no longer will participate in programs sponsored by the Mexican consulate that provided information on government programs for immigrants. The decision came about because the consulate is limiting the programs, called carousels, to Mexican nationals and not to other immigrants. The carousel is a popular mobile service that helps immigrants get a matricula consular, an identification card available to Mexican citizens, documented or not, and explains available government services. Kulangasi has spoken favorably of the program, but said last week that the state no longer will participate. Lon Hocklin, the governor's spokesman, said the consulate decided that carousels must be by invitation only, with participation limited to Mexican nationals. Hocklin said that Mexican nationals aren't the only group entitled to outreach, and that consulate stance forced the state's hand. Oregon, he said, will keep providing information to foreign residents about topics such as the Oregon Health Plan for those who are entitled and the availability of driver's licenses. Mexico's Consulate General to Portland, Fernando Sanchez Ugarte, did not dispute that it limited the carousels to Mexican citizens, but said it is not a new development.
Farmers and businesses depending on illegal immigrants to fill low-wage jobs are banging against a brick wall in Congress as they push for a temporary worker program. Even with President Bush on their side, advocates have been unable to overcome the opposition of those who are dead set against any proposal that in an election year could be labeled amnesty. The Senate Judiciary Committee has given itself a Thursday deadline to produce a bill that would tighten U.S. borders, impose new sanctions on illegal immigrants and their employers, and give legal status to some workers now here illegally. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has promised to vote on some kind of temporary guest worker program after Congress returns March 27th from a week-long process, but not necessarily one that includes illegal immigrants as advocated by Bush. Bush has proposed a temporary worker program allowing participants to register for legal status for a specific period of time and then be required to return home. It would not provide amnesty, which the administration says it would reject in any proposal, and also would not be an automatic path to citizenship. A Time poll in January found that 73% of Americans favor a guest worker program for illegal immigrants, but 46% said they should have to return first to their native country and apply for it. About 50% favor deporting all illegal immigrants. The House has already passed a tough immigration enforcement bill without any kind of guest worker program, defying threats from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and its allies.
In a guest lecture at the University of Texas School of Law last week, FBI Supervisory Senior Resident Agent Charles Rasner listed indie media, Food Not Bombs, and the Communist Party of Texas as terrorist watch cause groups in Austin. Rasner gave a presentation entitled Counterterrorism Efforts in Texas to a U.S. Law and National Security class at law school. He used PowerPoint slides to illustrate the nature of the terrorist threat in Central Texas. The word unclassified appeared prominently in bold red letters on the opening PowerPoint slide, listing three categories of cause groups potentially linked to terrorist activity. Rasner named white supremacist groups, Islamic terrorist groups, and anarchists. Rasner used a map of Texas to illustrate the existence of the three kinds of terrorist groups in the state. Austin was listed as a site of all three kinds of terrorist activity. Rasner then placed the FBI's Central Texas Terrorist Watch List on the screen. On a list of approximately 10 groups, Food Not Bombs was listed 7th. Indie Media was listed 10th, with a reference specifically to Indie Conference 2005. The Communist Party of Texas also made the list. Rasner explained that the groups could have links to terrorist activity. He noted that peaceful-sounding group names could cover more violent extremist tactics. In a response to a questioner, Rasner stated that the FBI will attend activist group meetings whenever it suspects that the group might engage in illegal activity. He said that he saw no problem with an agent failing to represent himself as a representative of the FBI and implied that the practice was common. This from InfoShop News.
Robert F. Kennedy's assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, comes up for parole again this week in a potential conflict for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger is married to RFK's niece. Sirhan shot Kennedy to death at a Los Angeles hotel in 1968, minutes after the New York senator claimed victory in the California presidential primary. Sirhan received a death sentence, which was commuted to life in prison in 1972 when the California Supreme Court declared the death penalty unconstitutional. The assassin's parole hearing at Corcoran State Prison today will be heard by two board members, one of whom was appointed by Schwarzenegger. If the board recommends his release, and that is unlikely, experts say, the decision of whether to free Sirhan will fall to Schwarzenegger, setting up an unusual dilemma. The governor's press office declined a comment, saying it is highly unlikely the decision would fall to Schwarzenegger. Sirhan's longtime lawyer died last year, and he has not chosen a new attorney.
Vanity Fair is reporting that former Washington Post executive editor Ben Bradley says it's reasonable to assume former State Department official Richard Armitage is likely the source who revealed CIA operative Valerie Plame's name to Post assistant managing editor Bob Woodward. In an article published in the magazine yesterday, Bradley was quoted as saying that Armitage is the likely source is a fair assumption. Armitage was Deputy Secretary of State in President Bush's first term. In the interview, Bradley says he does know the identity of Woodward's source, but does not recall making that precise statement to a Vanity Fair reporter. He said he has no interest in unmasking the official who first told Woodward about Plame in June 2003. Bradley said he learned the source's name from someone other than Woodward. Woodward said he did not reveal the source to his friend and former boss. Woodward and Bradley refused to disclose the source's name. Bradley's brief comments about the source are included in a lengthy article about the Plame case. Bradley is a longtime Post editor who rose to prominence when his reporting team of Woodward and Carl Bernstein broke the Watergate story. Woodward and Bradley refused for many years to reveal the identity of Deep Throat. Bradley defended Woodward after the journalist disclosed in November that a senior Bush administration official had told him about Plame and her CIA ties to a month before her identity was revealed. At the time, Woodward was criticized by Leonard Downey Jr., the Post executive editor, and others for not telling the newspaper about his knowledge of Plame until after Libby was indicted.
Faced with a major setback in their death penalty case against a confessed Al-Qaeda conspirator, prosecutors are considering whether to appeal the judge's decision to bar witnesses who were improperly coached by a government lawyer. U.S. District Judge Leonie Brinkema delayed the trial of Zacharias Moussaoui until Monday to give prosecutors a chance to sort out their opinions. On Tuesday, Brinkema excluded roughly half of the government's key witnesses from taking the stand after determining their testimony may have been tainted. Justice Department spokeswoman Tazia Skolinos called the decision disappointing. Without addressing the likelihood of overturning Brinkema's ruling, she stressed that prosecutors have already obtained a guilty plea from Moussaoui, and at a minimum, he will be imprisoned for life without a possibility of release. Brinkema's ruling rejected a request for more serious sanctions dismal of the government's entire death penalty case.
President George Bush launched a drive earlier this week to counter growing American opposition to the Iraq War. Stunned by low approval ratings, dragged down by pessimism over Iraq, Bush delivered the first in a series of speeches to convince Americans he has a strategy for victory, days before the third anniversary of the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. Bush spoke amid sectarian strife in Iraq that has raised fears of civil war, denting U.S. hopes for a troop drawdown anytime soon. Bombings in a Baghdad Shiite slum killed 52 people on Sunday. Bush insisted there had been progress training Iraqi forces to take over from the U.S. military and praised them for keeping things from spinning out of control until after the February 22nd bombing of a major Shiite mosque. But he acknowledged there was still plenty of work and days of struggle ahead. Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy said instead of leading a public relations blitz, Bush should bring Iraq's factions together for a summit to avoid a slide into civil war. While blaming sectarian violence on the enemies of freedom in Iraq, Bush also pointed the finger at Iran, saying some of the homemade bombs wreaking havoc in Iraq have been traced to its eastern neighbor. Bush said Iran had been responsible for some of the increasing lethality of attacks in Iraq.
An ailing beef cow from a small farm in Alabama was infected with mad cow disease, confirming the third case of the brain-wasting bovine disease in 27 months. The U.S. Agriculture Department said advanced tests on brain samples from the apparently 10-year-old cow identified the fatal disease. The cow was singled out last weekend. The discovery came while U.S. officials were trying to convince Japan to reopen its market to U.S. beef after a shipment of veal violated meat export rules by containing spinal material. Japan suspended beef trade on January 20th. South Korea said earlier yesterday it could cancel a planned opening of its market in April to U.S. beef if a new U.S. case was found. Seoul has banned U.S. beef since the first U.S. case in December 2003. Consumer advocacy groups called for stricter testing, but industry officials said U.S. safety measures were adequate and noted that Americans have actually increased their consumption of beef in the past couple of years. The United States has struggled to restore beef exports to overseas markets that totaled $3.8 billion annually before mad cow was discovered. Beef exports in 2006 are estimated at 905 million pounds, down 64% from 2003.
U.S. climate scientists have recovered a significant rise in the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, pushing it to a new record level. BBC News has learned the latest data shows CO2 levels now stand at 381 parts per million, 100 parts per million above the pre-industrial average. The research indicates that 2005 saw one of the largest increases on record, a rise of 2.6 parts per million. The figures are seen as a benchmark for climate scientists around the globe. The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, has been analyzing samples of air taken from all over the world, including America's Rocky Mountains. The chief carbon dioxide analyst for NOAA says the latest data confirms a worrying trend that recent years have, on average, recorded double the rate of increase from just 30 years ago. The precise level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is of global concern because climate scientists fear certain thresholds may be tipping points that trigger sudden changes. The UK government's chief scientific advisor, Professor Sir David King, said the new data highlighted the importance of taking urgent action to limit carbon emissions. This from the BBC.
The White House has rejected hurricane disaster recovery loans at a higher rate than any other administration in the last 15 years, according to a congressional study by Democrats. The report to be released today said business and home loan approval rates averaged about 60% after Hurricane Andrew devastated much of South Florida in 1992. The trend continued through the rest of resident of President George H.W. Bush's administration and into the Clinton administration, according to Democratic members of the House Small Business Committee. Small Business Association officials offered several explanations for the sharp drop-off in loan approval rates, including changes to the loan application process. The SBA also has argued that the scope of the devastation caused by three successive Gulf Coast hurricanes and the area's high number of low-income families and business owners have been responsible for higher rejection rates. Last week, the SBA announced it would extend until April 10th for deadline for victims of Hurricane Katrina and Rita to apply for physical damage loans.
One person was killed and up to seven others were missing when a rain-weakened dam failed on this western Hawaii island, sending a wall of muddy water, trees, and debris down the mountainside and prompting fears about the safety of other dams. The water cut off access to and from thousands of rural homes and luxury condominiums among Kauai's rural North Shore. At least two homes were swept off their foundations, and several hundred feet of the island's main highway were washed out. Search crews recovered the body of an unidentified adult male. Up to seven people were missing, and residents said one family whose home was swept away is missing several children. Governor Linda Lingle, who planned to tour the area this morning, signed a proclamation yesterday extending state disaster programs and services to the residents affected by recent rains and flooding.
Increasing numbers of people are raising poultry outdoors. They include the pastured or free-range poultry movement, growers across the Northwest who raise chickens on farms for natural food stores, and chickens kept in backyard coops in urban areas such as Portland. These outdoor flocks are at a higher risk of avian flu spread by migratory birds than those raised indoors. 95% of commercial flocks are at risk. Last week, federal officials said the deadly H5N1 subtype of avian flu could wind up in the U.S. in 6 to 12 months. It is expected that it will most likely be brought in by infected migratory birds. Outdoor chickens may become infected by the droppings of those birds. In the past 3 years, the World Health Organization reports 177 illnesses with 98 deaths, mostly in Asia. Health officials worry that the virus might ultimately gain the ability to transmit easily between people, resulting in a global epidemic. This from the Oregonian.
After Israel's grab of top Palestinian prisoners from a West Bank jail, angry Palestinians staged a protest strike today. The Palestinian president rushed back from Europe while Israel said it is determined to try the detainees for the assassination of an Israeli cabinet minister. "Got him," gloated one banner newspaper headline above a large photo of blindfolded, handcuffed Palestinian militant leader Ahmad Sadat being led away by Israeli troops in West Bank town of Jericho. Tuesday's day-long siege came just 2 weeks before the Israel's general election and boosted acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's image as a tough-minded leader. Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz, a member of Olmert's centrist Kadima party, dismissed allegations that the operation, which involved some 1,000 troops, including elite commandos, was timed to win over hardline voters. The raid set off unprecedented Palestinian reprisals against foreigners. U.S. and British wardens who had supervised the Jericho prisoners under an unusual 2002 arrangement left their posts just before Israeli troops arrived. Gunmen vandalized Western offices and kidnapped 11 foreigners, including an American university professor. Three hostages, a South Korean, a Canadian, and a French national, remain in captivity. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas cut short a European tour and was en route to the West Bank. In an unusually harsh statement, he blamed the United States and Britain for the Israeli raid. Israeli forces took the Palestinian Authority by surprise when they ringed the Jericho prisoner Tuesday morning and demanded the surrender of all prisoners, including Sadat and four accomplices, in the 2001 assassination of Tourism Minister Rehavan Zihivi. Throughout the day, groups of prisoners emerged from the lockup, their hands raised and forced to strip to their underwear. Helicopters and tanks shelled the building and jackhammers tore down the walls to force the others to give up as well. Sadat held out until after nightfall, then walked out in a single file of prisoners and Palestinian police. In all, according to the Israeli military, more than 300 Palestinians were detained and about 100 have since been released. Sadat and other top prisoners were questioned overnight at a small army base near Jericho.
The Pakistan Friday Times is claiming that Pakistan Foreign Office had paid tens of thousands of dollars to lobbyists in the U.S. to get anti-Pakistan references dropped from the 9/11 Inquiry Commission report. The Pakistani Weekly said its story is based on disclosures made by foreign service officials to the Public Accounts Committee at a secret meeting in Islamabad on Tuesday. It claimed that some of the commission members were also bribed to prevent them from including damaging information about Pakistan. The report quoted an officer as saying that dramatic changes were made in the final draft of the inquiry commission after the lobbyists got to work. The panel was formed to probe the September 11th terror attack and make suggestions to fight terrorism. After the commission tipped the lobbyists about damaging revelations on Pakistan's role in 9/11, they contacted the panel members and asked them to go soft on the country. The Friday Times claimed that a lot of money was used to silence these members.
Thousands of protesters began a march to the office of Time Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra yesterday, according to Reuters. They are vowing to surround it until he quits. The march billed as the final showdown by the extra-parliamentary coalition organizing the campaign to bring down Thaksin began after an all-night rally next to Bangkok's Grand Palace, which was attended by around 40,000 people. They marched without official permits to express their dissatisfaction with their government. They did not ask permission to do so. Large numbers of people were at the government house, where the cabinet was due to meet this morning. Shamlong Simran, the general who led a 1992 people power uprising against a military government in which about 50 people were killed, said there would be no trouble at this time. His blue-clad Dharma army, or the army of Buddha's teachings, barefoot and carrying the red, white, and blue Thai flag, led the way out of the rally ground to Government House. Thaksin called snap elections on April 2nd to defuse a campaign fueled by the tax-free $1.9 billion sale of relatives of the business empire he founded. The People's Alliance for Democracy is an extra-parliamentary coalition which accuses Thaksin of corruption and abuse of power. Previous rallies by the People's Alliance for Democracy have been peaceful, even festive. The People's Alliance for Democracy remain adamant that Thaksin must go, and the government is adamant he must stay. The two factions appear to be on a collision course.
French students and unions have vowed to keep up the pressure on the government with further action over the new law on youth employment contracts. Riot police were used to evict 200 protesting students from Sorbonne University in Paris at the weekend. Student unions are now planning street demonstrations against the law the rest of the week. The demonstrations are spontaneous outpourings of resistance. The French students did not apply for permits or appeal for peace. The French Prime Minister has defended the law, saying it will help less qualified youngsters find work. Speaking on French television, Dominique de Philippine said the first employment contract would especially help those in suburbs, where the youth employment rate is up to 40%. It is a contract for under 26-year-olds, which employers can break off at any time within the first 2 years without explanation. Students launched protests in dozens of universities last week, culminating in the three-day sit-in at Paris's Sorbonne, and ended when police stormed in early on Saturday with the batons and tear gas, clearing the main building in less than 10 minutes. This from the BBC. That was the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, March 15th, 2006. Portland area weather, today rain likely, highs 45 to 50. Tonight showers likely, lows around 40. Thanks for joining us for this morning's newscast. This morning's news was edited by Becca Bartleson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Boone Rivas. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Carlos Chavez.
And I'm Becca Bartleson.